Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Today it's going to be an hour, not an hour quite, but a half hour of spook power. That's what we're going to do. Actually, it's not just spooks we're going to be talking about. It's about experiences that people will have. We're going to be talking about the Wiser Field Guide to the Paranormal. And Judith Joyce is my guest today. Hi, Judith. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is just right up my alley. I absolutely love anything that is out of the ordinary. And this Wiser Field Guide to the Paranormal, you have a background of spiritualism, but how did this book come about? I mean, there's a gazillion ones out there. What made Red Wheel Wiser decide that they wanted to do something with all of these variables expressed in the book, which actually is quite good?
Thank you. Well, actually, I do have a background, which is why I was asked to write the book. But this book is part of a series. Wiser Publishers, which is, I think, one of the oldest metaphysical publishers in the United States, mm-hmm. has a whole series of field guides. And they're really fun books. There's a field guide to ghosts and a field guide to witches, and I think one for cryptozoology, all those, you know, mm-hmm. the chupacabras and the yetis. And then they wanted one, it's really, the Wiser Field Guide to the Paranormal is, I think, both a nice introduction for people to the paranormal, and also I was able to, because of the format of the book, really go a little bit more into depth. I wanted to explore the personalities of the people who are involved because the mysteries are so much more fascinating and more complicated if you really have a sense of the people involved with them as real people, not just superficial.
I agree. And I think that there is so much that's published that creates a sensationalism, but mm-hmm. when you can really get the real scoop on someone
yeah.
and the experiences that these people had without of all the woo-woo that goes along with it that
yes,
people like
exactly.
to add to it, Hollywood style.
When you don't need it.
You don't, because there's
no.
enough stuff there that just is absolutely mind-boggling.
It's so interesting as it is, you know.
Absolutely.
And
the truth
and
is better than
oh,
the make-believe.
Oh, you can't make this stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, with a lot of things with the paranormal, there are things that really we, at least as of yet, have not been able to explain. There are just a lot of very mysterious things. And I think, in a way, just giving it a quick explanation and however you explain it, just sort of writing it off, it almost cheapens it. These are very, very mysterious experiences that people have, mystical experiences, are just strange,
mm-hmm.
out of the ordinary. And if they were easily explained, well, you know, then they wouldn't be paranormal anymore.
Well, what I like about it so much, what I like about this book, is that it's very eclectic. You did not try to make any one area an exclusive. You really
No.
put together this, I'll use a different word, a collage, that enables people to flip through it if they want. Say, ooh, I'm interested in UFOs. No, I think I'm interested in the Yeti. No, I think I'd like to check this out. Or you can just read it from cover to cover the way I did and just go one right after the other and you just have a great time. Use a highlighter. It's a wonderful way to remember where you were.
Yeah.
But I really think that it's important to talk about these things and
yeah.
to get them out of what I call the ignorance circle. And to open up the mind and realize that science does not have all the answers. It never has. It never will. And there are a lot of things that are one-time experiences. Or you
yeah.
will become aware of a particular person that has some very unique talents, and that may be the one person that has that talent in a century.
Exactly.
It's absolutely amazing. You have a person in the book that I really loved reading about, Baba Vanga.
Oh, isn't she interesting?
Oh, my goodness. What a fascinating woman. And she was born
really
in 1911.
Well known in the United States.
I've never
really
heard of her.
No. Although if you look on, you know, if you look online, you'll find especially her prophecies. Although, again, some of them are very sensationalized. Baba Vanga was this woman, you know, she lived in the Soviet bloc, and so she was not well known here.
Mm-hmm.
She lived in Bulgaria, and she was blind, and since her youth, she was a prophetess, and she healed people, and she had these extraordinary abilities. And she did leave these sort of apocalyptic prophecies, and I think that's what fascinates people the most about her. But her whole life is just incredible.
Yes, and let's go back to how she became blind, because she wasn't born blind.
No, she wasn't.
She was from an extremely poor family. She was a preemie baby. They
mm-hmm.
didn't, and then they didn't have anything like we've got today to work with babies. She wasn't expected to survive, but she did. And when she was 12 years old, a very unique thing happened. She got stuck in a whirlwind,
yeah.
lifted her up in the air, and dumped her in a field. And she was there in that field for a long time, but she was all covered with dirt and debris.
Yeah, dust.
Yeah, and she could not open her eyes. And that is what damaged her eyesight.
Yes.
And by 1925... she was sent to school for the blind in Serbia.
In Serbia.
She learned to read
yeah.
Braille. But she said it was after she lost her vision that the
yeah.
clairvoyance came in.
Yes.
Just fascinating.
Yes, yes. And she never felt sorry for herself. She was, you know, she was a very stoic woman. She,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's the great story with her husband. She became, you know, she was clairvoyant, and during the war, people would come and ask her about their relatives at the front.
Mm-hmm.
Were they, you know, were they going to come home? Were they, should they be preparing, you know, funerals? And she received this following, and at one point, the man who she eventually married came to see her to find out information about his brother who had been killed. And he had been seeking vengeance on the murderers, and she made him promise not to take revenge. And
mm-hmm.
she did tell him, you know, the information afterwards. She didn't, you know, she felt it wasn't good for him. She, you know, she was a very devout Christian woman. She was a very religious woman, and she told him not to. And they ended up getting married.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he didn't seek the vengeance.
No, he listened to her.
Yeah, he kept his word. He did
yes.
not seek the vengeance. Now,
no.
I was amazed to find out that a lot of people had written about her. I have never
no.
found anything written about her. You know, I don't know if they published it in the West. Maybe it was just done in Russia.
It's very little, yeah.
But she would take a sugar cube
mm-hmm.
and used it like a crystal to see things. It was a focusing point for her. I mean, these little things that you talk about with her, absolutely amazing. She was great. Now, here's a blind woman telling them how to find people.
Yeah.
And she foretold Stalin's death,
yes.
which could have put her to death really fast
yes.
because nobody
yes.
was supposed to say that. But
she
know,
was consulted by politicians, which is unbelievable because, you know, it was officially an atheist state that, you know, disapproved of superstition. And yet, politicians, you know, allegedly Brezhnev came
mm-hmm.
to see her.
Mm-hmm.
So, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. No, this story in the book is just absolutely amazing. And she passed away in 1996 at the age of 85. And there is a museum
mm-hmm.
that has been dedicated to her. So her story, all of the story that's in here is absolutely amazing. And I loved what you had about ball lightning, because I've experienced ball lightning. It's a very real phenomenon. Oh, yes. I've seen it more than once. You also have information, and I've pulled out a number of these stories about people I'd never heard of. And it's Lisa and May Bangs, the Bangs sisters.
Oh, yeah. Aren't
My
they fascinating?
Goodness, what a photo. I'm so glad we're living in this era, because the women that were in their 20s or 30s look like 150.
Yes.
Jeez.
That's true.
I mean, it's just amazing how much we've come forward as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, the 660 is the new 30.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Tell us about the Bang Sisters. They're quite interesting.
The Bang Sisters were, at the start of the spiritualist movement, were among the early mediums, but they developed a specialty which is so fascinating. It's a specialty called precipitated spirit portraits. And it's not the same thing as automatic writing or automatic painting, because automatic painting is, you know, when something guides your hand and you create a painting that maybe normally you couldn't create, but it's your hand. Precipitated spirit portraits are, hypothetically speaking, created without human hands. A canvas, and it was done in a room. The rooms were not dark. People observed. You know, there's a tendency to think that people just used to be more gullible way back when, but people were, back then, were very concerned that they were being, conned, or that people were charlatans. So they were watched quite closely. There would be paint in the room, but no brushes. And portraits, usually of people who were no longer with us, and there's a very famous precipitated spirit portrait of Abraham Lincoln. But most people are anonymous people, just people would come, and this is before photography was common. Mm-hmm. This is before color photography. And these images would just materialize on the canvas. Now, hypothetically, you could say it was sleight of hand. They switched canvases, except that in many cases, the mediums didn't know what the people looked like because there were no photographs. They have been analyzed now, and you can actually see these portraits. They're in a museum in Lilydale, New York, which is near Buffalo. Scientists can't figure out how they were made. They look like they were airbrushed, but this is long before that system existed. They have sort of a fine powder on them, as if it's described as resembling butterfly wings.
Wow.
And no one can figure quite out how they were made. There's no brush strokes. There's no one has been able to reproduce it. So if it was fake, they did an excellent job. But no one has been able to reproduce how they were made, and they're very beautiful, mysterious-looking portraits. People claim that the eyes follow them or the eyes open and shut. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
There was a medium that I met, and he was almost 90 years old when I met him. And this was a few years ago. His name was George Daisley. He was written about and was very, very famous in England. Mm-hmm. And he grew up in that area. And during the war, he was trained by a number of very famous psychic mediums, and he became a trance medium. And one of the things that George would demonstrate in his stage performances was a slate that would be put next to him or in close proximity. He kept his hands right in front of him, and people would ask questions, and the answers would be written on the slate.
Yes.
And that's a very rare talent, and it worked.
Yep.
It was something, and he did it. He could write backwards, which you talk about that technique in the book.
Yes.
I mean, there are so many things that we cannot put in a box. And these sisters were tested, and you give a lot of good information on that. I mean, it's really, really fascinating reading. Now, let's talk go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, when I was doing my research, and, you know, over the years, it's a topic that interests me, I'm always frustrated because people tend to be very dismissive, either because they believe all the claims or because they just automatically refute all the claims. But often the portraits you have of the people involved are very, very superficial and shallow. And I don't think you can appreciate, you know, the thing with the Bang Sisters is they really were observed. People really wanted to make sure that they weren't pulling, you know, the wool over their eyes. It was very controversial back then. So it's not just that, you know, people used to believe anything that was put in front of them. I think, if anything, they might have been more suspicious back then. So they were just very interesting women, and a lot of the early spiritualists were just fascinating, intelligent people.
Let's talk about the crystal skulls, because these are so fascinating.
They are so fascinating. And again, there are crystal skulls, or these objects, they're skulls. They're formed from a quartz crystal. They can date the crystal itself. Most of the skulls ostensibly have been found in Mexico and in South America. There are also some from Peru. They can date the crystal, and the crystal seems to come from quarries in California. But they don't know when they were made. But again, scientists cannot find tool marks. The techniques apparently used to make these skulls didn't exist when they were made or even when they were found. And they're just evocative, fascinating objects with really many legends, but no scientific explanation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, among the Tibetans, mm-hmm. and this goes back centuries and centuries, apparently they used to, if they found a perfect piece of crystal that did not have any blemish, and the Himalayan mountains are filled with all kinds of phenomenal materials, but if they found one that was literally hand-rubbed, but that took them, when they would do it, they would rub it with sand until it was perfectly smooth. And I remember reading a story about one crystal ball that was just an incredible scrying tool, but it had taken like 100-150 years to get it to that level of perfection. But I don't think these crystal skulls with the... And they look different. They're not all identical. They are skulls, but they're different sizes. There's the one that was found by the woman, and I'm trying to remember her name. Her name was Anna, I believe. That was called
The Crystal Skull of Doom.
Yes, and
or the Crystal Skull of Love, as they prefer to call it now.
Right. I don't know why the doom got attached to it, but this...
Oh,
that
like the sensationalism.
Right. But it amazed me because the teeth, the eye sockets, the nasal sockets, everything is absolutely perfect. And this looks like a pretty good-sized skull. This isn't something that's like just a little bit
missing. Yeah, this is substantial.
Yeah. So we've got all of these. And, of course, Indiana Jones, the movie about the crystal skull, was really quite popular. And it was, when the 13 skulls come together, then there's going to be a whole new world that evolves because of the energies of these skulls. I just am so intrigued with the various ways that these different skulls evolved. And I don't even think, I know you said that they could test the age on these, but I honestly think they are quite old. I'm sure they are. You know, I think they're older than what they've ever imagined them to be, because so many people get locked into time paradigms of, 10, 15, 20,000 years. And excuse me, I mean... Yeah. There are things that could have been around here a million years ago. I know.
It's as if there was no history before that time, but clearly, there was.
Mm-hmm. Now,
the argument with the Sphinx as to how old the Sphinx in Egypt really is, because there an argument that it is significantly older than is generally acknowledged.
It's so hard to break paradigms when you want to make things concrete, and then you find, the Sphinx has been around a lot longer than we think, folks, and there's a lot of other stuff that's gone on in Egyptian history that we just don't have the records of.
Right.
And, I can remember coming across information where the Hawaiians were descended from the Egyptians. They had a hierarchical, and it's in their verbal history that they go all the way back to Egypt. Now, these were some of the finest navigators on the planet at the time.
Yes.
But look at what we're finding out today. We're finding out that the Chinese went to South America.
Yes.
Surprise? I don't think so. The Africans were in South America. There were cultures. There were mixtures. There were trade routes that they're finally recognizing. They're finding these maps. I mean, here's all of this information coming out. And so many people say, no, that can't be possible. Come on, let's get a Yahoo here. There's been a lot going on we had no clue about.
And I had an astrologer who was always very excited whenever there was any sort of archaeological discovery, because his theory was that things were discovered for a reason, especially sacred objects or objects of power, places of power, they are revealing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things that have been lost for centuries or millennia, and all of a sudden we're you know, receiving this information that has just been missing for so long. And he said, you always have to pay attention. You know, it's like playing connect the dots.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's just like there was something I watched recently about the Black Sea and the areas around the Black Sea, and they have now discovered that there are whole cities underwater.
Yeah.
That they did not know were underwater there. Now, why is that the case? We have the technology now that enables us to get into these places and spaces, and I think it's downright exciting. And I think it's, in a way, it's very humbling because
yes.
there have been those civilizations that have come and gone, and people will get rather arrogant and say, well, there's no recorded history. Well, guess what? If we had the volcano here, Mount St. Helens and or Mount Rainier, decide to have a severe PMS attack and she threw up big time, guess what? Everything would disappear under molten
yes.
lava.
Yes.
So you're not, your books and everything else are going to be gone.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're not going to have anything there.
No, it's like a clean slate.
That's exactly the way I look at it. And I go...
And yet it happened. And yet there, you know, it's there underneath the lava. And maybe someday
mm-hmm.
people will be able to uncover it. That is what is so fascinating to me about the skulls, is that we still do not have the technology to understand them. And yet, people somehow had the technology or the inventiveness or the creativity to create them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. I think it's great. Now, speaking of things that we don't know about, you
yeah.
talk about a people called the Dogon.
Oh,
and
yes.
they live in Mali, which is
yes.
300 miles south of Timbuktu in West Africa. This
in
is
the middle of nowhere.
Fun. In the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Tell us about these fascinating people. They're like the Aborigines of Australia.
They are fascinating people. And, you know, when I was a little girl and they wanted to say you were going to, you know, the ends of the earth, they'd say you were going to Timbuktu. Well, these the people who live on the outskirts of Timbuktu, they're not even in Timbuktu. They were people who isolated themselves very early, centuries ago, because they were afraid of the slave trade and of forced conversion to Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And so they found an extremely remote area to live in, and they have been very isolated, really, for 500 years. They have this extraordinary astronomical system. And, you know, these are people with no technology by Western standards. They don't have telescopes.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, you know, and yet they have this knowledge of the stars that we are just achieving now with our technology.
Mm-hmm.
They claim that these deities, who they call the Namo, came from Sirius and taught them, and as they describe them, you know, it sounds like a spaceship. As if these people, you know, or as if these beings
mm-hmm.
came from and taught them all sorts of arts of civilization, and it's just they, you know, they know about planetary weight.
Mm-hmm.
Just really, really, really fascinating. And now they are a bit more public, and you can go visit them. People, there are tour groups that will take you to the Dogon visit villages. There may also be an ancient Egyptian connection here. There is some theory that their ancestors originally came from Egypt and then traveled west through Africa.
There's
and
just
a bit of all roads leading to Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is so much that is recorded. And with the Aborigines in
yeah.
Australia, there is a cave that finally was shared by the Aboriginal people with someone that they trusted, that they outlined an area of the universe. That they said, this is why we are here. We were brought here by these people. So you have all of these different points of information throughout your book, and I just think it's wonderful. I absolutely,
you.
Absolutely love it. And, you've got stuff in here about the Tibetans. You've got stuff about ectoplasm. It's so eclectic that it really gives you something to talk about. I mean, you don't have to wait till Halloween to breathe the hair on the back of somebody's neck. I think
paranormal tends to break up into two camps. You have the extraterrestrial camp, and then you have the spiritualist ghost camp. And I didn't want to select one over the other.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite quotes is actually from Betty Hill. And Betty Hill was half of the married couple, Betty and Barney Hill, who are the first documented, who had the first documented claims of alien abduction.
Mm-hmm.
And she was interviewed, and she was trying to emphasize, you know, they were very normal people. And she was trying to emphasize that by saying that she and Barney do not believe in ghosts, but they do believe in extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just found that so fascinating, because I think if I had had experience like that, I would be open to everything.
Well, all of us are different. And the Hills, when they went through their experience, it wasn't until they went through hypnosis that they got a real good insight into it. Well, I know that we've got a couple of extra minutes here. I want you to tell my audience why this has been so comfortable and such a joy for you to put together. You've got quite a spiritualist background, don't you?
I do. I come from several generations. I mean, not everybody in my family, but we have the anomalies in my family for several generations. They were spiritualists in Budapest, of all places. There was a point where spiritualism was very fashionable,
mm-hmm.
and not as obscure as I think it is now. But it really was something that people were very comfortable discussing and were familiar with, whether or not they were actually involved with it. And so I do have, and I come from a long line of women who are psychic dreamers.
Mm-hmm.
My mother, and very normal, very ordinary things. You know, she dreamed my college roommate was pregnant when I hadn't told her. But she, you know, she called me up and she said, you know, she knew. She had dreamt it. So the concept of paranormal qualities in terms of clairvoyance or clairaudience, I'm very open to believing, because I've, you know, heard my mother tell me about her dreams, and, you know, other members of my family tell me. So I am very open to believing that other people have whatever their own unique abilities are. And maybe we have these talents that are, you know, really unique, in that there's, when something is unique, it's rare. And just because only one person or very few people have something, it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It just means that it's very rare. And I did have a very good time writing this book. I had fun with it. They're really fun, interesting topics, and the people involved with it, people like the Fox sisters, who, you know, were really they're considered the first spiritualist mediums, and they turned out to be very tragic. They had these very tragic lives, but they're very interesting, and many of the people involved with the paranormal were very sincere,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's something that also gets lost. They were very sincere. Betty and Barney Hill did not want publicity.
Right.
And,
right,
you know,
most
they,
of the people don't.
And it was a time when it was not, they were very brave. I mean, it was a time when it was not stylish. You know, there were no ghost hunters on television. There were no, it
well,
wasn't.
Not only that, but that would have been, in the minds of many people, they had been visited by Satan and all kinds of garbage that was dished out. That's the thing that happens with so many of the stories. People will all of a sudden put them in a box, make them good, bad, or indifferent experiences, and their experiences, and there's a reason why they are happening to that person. And as you say, some people have certain skills that other people may not have. But
mm-hmm.
I strongly believe that the intuitive aspect is very normal and very natural. And it's when we are open. I like the term that you use. When you're open and you're aware and you say, okay, I'm not going to be the fool, but how am I to say what this person's experience is? I haven't lived it. I listened to a woman today who I had met 30 years ago. And she said, these are the things that I've gone through and the experiences I have. And I just sat there and I listened. And she was not, She was not boasting or bragging, but she has had some very, very profound visions and spiritual experiences, and this is a woman that is of a deep faith. She doesn't belong to any religious organization, but she really has a sense of conscience about everything that she talks about. Just a wonderful human being. So I think that we need to open up our ears, take the mental wax out, and be willing to listen. What's the website where more people can find out about information about the book?
I think you should go to the Wiser Books website. It's redwheelwiser.com. I'm still building a website, but Red Wheel Wiser will have all the information. And it's Wiser, W-E-I-S-E-R.
.com, and you can find out about all of the different.
And the book is available wherever fine books are sold, online in stores. It's not a difficult book to find.
Absolutely. Judith, it's been a joy having you as
Donna,
a guest
thank
today.
You so much.
It's been a real pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for a moment. When we come back, I've got more good things to share with you, so I hope you'll stay with us. And again, Judith Joyce is the author of The Wiser Field Guide to the Paranormal. What a wonderful thing to read. Some person told her that they didn't want to read it at night before they went to bed. It would scare them. Fiddle-dee-dee. Read it anytime, and it makes for wonderful conversations. Woo-hoo! You'd have fun with this one. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. RawEnergyRadio.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number if you'd like to call in and chat with me today. Remember, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, sit back, relax. Oh, I do like to know where you're calling in from. And then I'll give you my perceptions, and you're welcome to ask a question about anything you like. 888-815-9756 is the telephone number to call into. I want to let you know who's going to be with me next week. We've got a great lineup of people. On Monday, of course, that's Valentine's Day, Love and Illusions. Yes, that's what we're going to be talking about. Sheila Sterling is going to be my guest, and this is a powerful book. And I think you will really find the subject interesting on more than one level. Then on Tuesday, we're going to be talking about money. Denise Winston is a financial advisor, so we're going to be discussing how you can make money work for you. And then Shatar Shapira, she has some music that is just delightful. We're going to be having her on Wednesday, so we're going to have a bit of upbeat, very, very enjoyable tunes that we're going to be sharing. It's her latest CD. She's appeared on CSI and has done a number of other engagements. Then on the 17th, we are going to be talking with Joyce Fallon. Now, she is a children's book author. We're going to be discussing what it takes to be a children's book author and then also talk about her two books, A Robin's Nest and Choo Choo Woody, which I think you will enjoy. And then on the 18th, we're going to be talking about The Drugless Guide to Balancing Female Hormones. I was talking with someone earlier today that had been on the synthetic hormones that so many of us were put on and how you don't have to go that route anymore. Nope, no more hormones from horse's urine. Pregnant mare urine. You don't have to have that anymore. They now have discovered that there are many other ways to be able to balance the hormonal aspect for women. So that's going to be a week from today. So we've just got a phenomenal lineup of people, and there's so much information that is out there. It's just always a delight to be able to bring people forward and have them to discuss a little bit the detail of why certain things are beneficial for us. It is amazing the changes that are being discovered. My husband yesterday was telling me that he had heard a comment by a doctor. He missed out on most of this person's interview, but they said radical mastectomies were not necessary in so many cases today that they had ways of dealing with breast cancer where women didn't have to get, and this is my term, butchered. And I know it is an old, old way of doing things, but that is not what has to be done anymore. So stuff is coming forward in the way of not just guesswork, but actual ways that we can treat for different conditions and circumstances. So it's just absolutely marvelous. It's exciting to me because we've got so many sincere, earnest people in all parts of the globe that really want to make the world a better place for us to live in. And it takes being willing to step outside the box, to have the courage to dare to be different, and sometimes to go directly against what might be considered the grain of attitude. But you know what? That's been the way it's been. Look at your history. The people that have often made the breakthroughs, those that have been in the accepted side of society, often will try to destroy them. And they'll find it doesn't work because these people have made breakthroughs. And in today's world, because of our capacity of communicating much more effectively and efficiently, information is getting out and about in wonderful, wonderful ways. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Oh, have you been dealing with clutter? Is this the time of the year when you like to do your spring housekeeping? I had a friend that called me the other day and said, oh my goodness, we thought we found bed bugs in the house, and we've just been doing all this cleaning with the drapes and all this kind of stuff. Well, spring cleaning really came about because centuries ago, people didn't have the capacity for keeping things clean very easily. Once you got past winter, spring was around, the first thing you wanted to do was open up the windows, let fresh air in, and then whatever you had in the way of a mattress would go outside, rugs would be carried outside. If you were in England, they'd be beaten so that the dirt and the debris would come out. There weren't any vacuum cleaners, and there weren't any of the sanitation factors like we have today that are so readily available. It was a whole different world. Well, spring cleaning evolved for a reason, and that was a way of cleaning things up that had gotten very, very dirty. So clutter often, even though we don't necessarily have to go through that on that level anymore, sometimes we need to really do the spring cleaning with the clutter that's accumulated over months. And I don't know about you, but holy Moses, I can get so much paper clutter within just a week. It's unbelievable between the materials I receive for the program and mail and you name it. It just adds up. Well, I was so proud of myself. I went through 8 huge boxes and finally got all of these old records, you know, shredded and put out, and I just patted myself on the back. I was so pleased. But there is a statement by Albert Einstein, out of clutter, find simplicity. And I think many times we get overwhelmed. And there's a gal by the name of Molly Snyder. She felt like she was drowning, absolutely drowning. And she just had clutter all over the place in her life. But not only that, but one day someone came up to her and asked her if she was expecting, when she was going to have her baby. Well, you can imagine how she felt. Molly had allowed things to get to her, so there was a lot of emotional eating. And she said, oh, my goodness, I have just let things go awry. And so she decided, because she had a family, a husband and a couple of kids, she decided she was going to get rid of the clutter in her life. And she said she put a challenge out for herself. She was going to remove 500 pounds of clutter from her home, from her family's life. And she said, you know what? The remark by the woman, and I realized my clutter at the office, it was just this, your life is so messy that it's time to get it in order. So she decided she was going to give herself a year. She started a blog called thesnyder5.com. And she said she figured if she tried to do everything at once, she would not be a happy person, and she would get very discouraged and might even give up. So she decided she was going to take her house room by room and look at the clutter in each room. And the one she started with was a desk in the kitchen. How many of you have a desk in your kitchen? We don't have a desk, but I've got this large counter. It's amazing. It's like a magnet for everything. And she said she took a before picture, and then she got trash bags and marked them put away, throw away, give away, and then recycle. She said anything that did not belong in the desk went into one of those bags. Absolutely no question about it at all. That's exactly what she did. So she said that she found old receipts, she found junk mail, she found to-do lists that she had never done anything with, she found notes she had written to herself. She went through, just in that one area, a ton of paper, and she said, I found all kinds of things. I called them my little treasures. She found tools that were supposed to be in her husband's workshop. She found a purse that she had just loved with a broken zipper. She said, I even found a reindeer headband. Okay, if you're listening to this, you're thinking, holy Moses, this woman really was a clutterer. Well, she ended up going through anything. And you know what she did? She took those plastic bags and she weighed them. All of this clutter that she had found came to 5 pounds. So she went, marked 5 pounds, so that left her 495 to go. So she said, I'm just doing little tiny bits. She said, sometimes there'd be weeks when I wouldn't do anything because I got so busy with some other stuff. But she was marking deliberately on her calendar. She was mindfully present about this, and she just kept doing it. She had a junk drawer. She said she purged 3 pounds from that one. She went into a hall closet. Oh, do you have one of those that you close your eyes, cover your eyes when you go into it and just sort of feel around hoping you'll find what you want? Well, she took 26 pounds of stuff out of a hall closet. There were 38 pounds of shoes that she took from her shoe bin. Now, she's weighing all this stuff as she goes along. Kept marking her calendar how much she would give away or recycle or put away or throw away. She said she made a mistake while she was going through this process. Remember, she gave herself a year. She bought some storage bins, but she said, I found I ended up with more clutter. The storage bins, clutter went into it. Well, by summer, she had unloaded 300 pounds of clutter, 300 pounds. And she said it was amazing. It seemed like there was magic that was occurring because Molly's blog was getting as many as 400 hits a day. People were paying attention to what she was doing. And these were some of the comments that she got on the blog. One woman said, seeing someone else's clutter makes me feel so much better. She didn't say anything about hers, but she said something about others. And another one said, you've inspired me. I've got 2 garbage bags for Goodwill. And, you know, all these different comments coming in from people. Do you know what? While she was doing this, she also was losing weight. That's right. As she got rid of the clutter in her life, she was also trimming down. And she said, it was amazing. Whenever she'd go through drawers and closets, the questions were always in her mind. When's the last time I used this? Is there a good reason for keeping it? And sometimes before she'd toss things, she'd take pictures and write about how they had gotten into her life and what they meant to her. And she said at one time on her blog, it isn't easy, but a scrapbook takes up less space than lots of stuff, and preserving the memory helps me let go of it. So some things she wasn't going to let go. She had a collection of items from her grandma and mementos from trips that she had had with her husband and her family. But she also started doing something, and that was putting her treasures that she might want to sell on Craigslist. Well, 333 pounds of clutter she cleared away. Then it went up to 412, 442, and as 2010 went down, she got closer and closer to her goal of 500 pounds of clutter. One day, just before New Year's, she blogged, I've cleared 500 pounds of clutter. And in this process, she dropped 10 pounds, and she said that was very, very special. She said, this aha moment I had when I reached my objective made me realize that conquering my clutter was the only, well, it was more than just what it was. It was a beginning of something new. She said, I learned a lot of lessons, and one of the lessons she learned was to take life bit by bit. She said, when you take things slow and steady, anything is doable. And now I have a clutter-free house, and I have a clutter-free life. I thought you'd enjoy that. So anyway, if you wanted to go to her blog, go to the Snyder5, that's the number 5.com. What a story. 500 pounds of clutter. Amazing. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break. When we come back, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and if you want to chat with me, 888-815-9756. And, ooh, I might have a chocolate recipe for you, too, just in case you don't have something for Valentine's. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. RawEnergyRadio.com.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna, and if you'd like to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. Valentine's Day is on Monday, and maybe you'd like to have some chocolate, but maybe in a way where you don't, you're not getting pounds of it, but you've just got this wonderful chocolate fondue. Uh-huh. How does that grab your attention? Chocolate fondue is really yummy. So if you have a fondue pot sitting around, this might be a recipe that you would just utterly love, because you can serve it with fruit or marshmallows, or if you want some cookies, anything that goes with chocolate. You could even cut up some pound cake if you wanted, or if you were in a hurry. But this is something simple, easy, and it's really delicious. Now, this is what you need for the fondue. You're going to need 8 ounces of dark chocolate. Oh, by the way, this recipe could be doubled if you had, you know, a group of people over. 8 ounces of dark chocolate, 3/4 cup of heavy cream, and 2 tablespoons of your favorite brandy. An orange liqueur would also be very good with this. Now, again, you could serve it with fruit, marshmallows. You could even serve it with, you know, nuts if you wanted to do that, because you use the little forks. Walnuts would be delicious with this, even almonds, but it'd be up to you as to what you'd want to do. Now, this is how simple it is. You break your dark chocolate into small pieces, placing it in a small saucepan together with the heavy cream, and you want to heat the mixture very, very gently. And of course, you're going to be stirring it constantly until the chocolate melts and is well blended with the cream. That'll take a few minutes. Then you remove the pan from the heat and stir in the liqueur that you want in the chocolate. Pour it into a fondue pot or a small flame-proof dish and keep it warm. And, of course, many fondue pots have those little stands you put it on. You have a burner. And you can serve it with whatever you want. And also, you know, there is a tip that I came across. You don't need to use a special fondue set. You know, dish warmers that use a nightlight are just as good for keeping the fondue warm. If you don't have one, you can stand the fondue dish in a larger dish and pour in enough boiling water to come halfway up the fondue dish. Whatever method you use to keep your fondue warm, you want to make sure that it's on a heat-proof stand to protect whatever surface you're going to be put it on. Now, if you're going to use fruit, remember, fruit that discolors, like bananas, apples, and pears, should be dipped in lemon juice so that they won't turn brown. They won't oxidize on you. And, of course, you want the pieces so that they're bite-sized. But it's a lot of fun. So that's just a real simple, easy recipe to have. And, you know, this is not just for Valentine's Day. It's a wonderful way to end a meal if you're having company and you want just something light. Or maybe you just want to have a bunch of gals over and you say, what could we do? And having a fondue like this just gives you that little bit of extra sweetness. And it doesn't have to really be a whole bunch of something where people don't have a good time and yet you don't feel like you are putting on the pounds because of that. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Now, I do want to remind those of you who are in the Pacific Northwest that the Northwest Women's Show is coming up March 4th, 5th, and 6th. On March 4th, I'm going to be presenting a women's forum. We're going to have 6 wonderful speakers, 3 hours of information. The first hour, which is from 11 until noon, is going to be about health and wellness. We're going to have an energy healer and also a person that's involved with nutrition and wellness and understanding how to maintain it and achieve it first and then maintain it. And then the second hour is going to be all about animal communications. And that hour is going to be from 1 until 2. And then the third hour from 2 until 3 is going to be about law, about women and children and what we often are distressed to hear about, abuse in the home and the rights that they have that can protect them, and also some other information that makes a difference in the life of women and children. So it's going to be going on the 4th, 5th, and 6th of March. I invite you to come out, say hello. I'm going to be in booth 407, and it is a dynamic event. It's absolutely awesome. We have tens of thousands of women that come out every year. I've been involved with them for almost 10 years now, and it's just a joy. So come by, say hello at booth 407. I'll be doing many readings as well as having a large display of books available. And also know that you can go to Northwest Women's Show nwwomensshow.com, and you'll get all of the details about the prices on tickets, etc. There's so much going on there. It's a wonderful way to spend a weekend, and I invite you to bring a friend because you'll have an absolute blast while you're there. Also, for those of you in the Pacific Northwest, I'm going to be doing an appearance, a one-day appearance, over at the Emerald Spiral Expo, which is going to be held at the Kent Commons. And we will be having someone next month on air from this event talking about the different people and things that are going to be going on there. But that is going to be on March 26th, the Saturday, free admission, and it's just a marvelous event. I'll be there again. I'll be doing many sessions for people as well as having materials and items on display. So it's a wonderful, cozy arena of people that are just so talented with products and services that I know that you will enjoy. Well, we've just got a wonderful, wonderful lineup. I know we're running out of time here. I want to just be very happy for you for this weekend. Just wherever you are, if you're on the East Coast, take care. I know the weather has just been slamming you like crazy. Also, people in Oklahoma and other parts of the Midwest, you've been getting slammed too. So take care, be safe, be healthy, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And wherever you are, remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. It is your right to life to live it with the quality and level of standard that you wish to set. You're the one that can make the choices. You're the one that is living in your own skin. Enjoy your journey and whatever. Don't put yourself down. Build yourself up. Realize that this is now. What you do with now is what creates your future. This is Donna Sebo. Have, again, a magnificent weekend. We'll be seeing you right here, same time, same place, on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.